This is Chasing Wisdom, your source for conversation and serious ideas for those striving to become wiser leaders in business. Your host is Dr. Sam Serto. Sam is the Steinmetz Professor of Management in the Graduate School of Business at Rollins College in Winter Park, Florida. He also serves as a leader at Northland, a church distributed located in Central Florida. Along with leaders from various fields, our goal is to provide practical wisdom for those navigating real-world business challenges. Welcome to this conversation about how to become a wiser leader in business, Bible, and life.
Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Sam Serto, and you're listening to the Chasing Wisdom podcast. Here, leaders talk about business, Bible, and life to help all of us become wiser leaders. Today, our guest is John Crossman. John is a successful businessman, a tireless philanthropist, and a devoted family man. He is president of Crossman & Company, one of the Southeast's largest commercial real estate companies specializing in retail leasing, management, and investment sales. John is a proud graduate of Florida State University. In order to foster racial reconciliation, he conceived of a plan to use real estate education to help minorities gain fiscal parity through greater participation in the wealth-building real estate industry. To that end, John endowed real estate scholarships at Florida A&M University and the Bethune-Cookman College, both historically African-American higher educational institutions. John is recognized as a United Negro Fund champion of education and was awarded the Underground Railroad Award from the U.S. House of Representatives. Senator Marco Rubio nominated him to the Regional Service Academy Nomination Board, while Governor Rick Scott appointed him to Valencia College's Board of Trustees. It's my distinct pleasure to welcome John Crossman here today. Welcome, John.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, it's an honor to have you here today. We talk about business and Bible and life, and you know what? I've heard about your Father of the Year Award. That must have been fun.
That was crazy. That was really, really great. Really, really great. I will tell you that when they told me I was getting it, you know, the American Diabetes Association, I told them I would not accept it until my children said it was okay. You know, they have veto power over that one, you know.
Well, cool. Tell us about Crossman & Company.
Sure.
A little bit of background.
Yeah.
Remembering that we have people from all over the world listening to this.
Yeah.
And that some may be familiar with commercial real estate companies, some may not.
Sure.
Give us a bit of background.
Yeah, so our company is 26 years old. We're privately held, and we're based here in Orlando, Florida. We do real estate services in the seven states in the southeast U.S., so basically from Florida up to Virginia, over to Alabama, Carolinas, Tennessee, and Georgia. We have five offices and about 70 employees. And Crossman & Company doesn't own any real estate property. What we do is we provide services for the people and companies that do. So there's Fortune 500 companies that, you know, invest money in the stock market, but sometimes they invest them into commercial real estate. So they're, I always call them institutional owners. They're owning real estate to invest it for return, and those companies hire us to help them with those properties. And then sometimes you have corporations that buy real estate for use purposes, like Publix, you know, owns a shopping center where they then own their own building and they sell groceries out of it. So sometimes corporations are our clients. And then we also have, you know, families, private investors. You know, there might be a family that owns a piece of land that then wants to develop into a shopping center that can make a return for long-term income. So they bring us in. So we are service providers.
Okay. So that you're generally managing an area that might be called a strip mall?
Exactly. So we can do anything when you think of shopping centers. So it could be a small shopping center. You might just see like a hair salon or a nail salon, a dentist, something like that. Or a grocery anchored center. We see any kind of grocery store in there. We all go with regional malls. So you think about a million square foot mall, we handle those as well. And I should just mention the other thing. One of the things we do, it's kind of interesting, we do some special servicing asset management. And what that means is that sometimes when a property gets taken back by the bank will bring us in and sort of emergency situations to take over property and run the property. So what we do every day is we make sure the tenants pay their rent. We make sure that the landscaping is done. You know, if there's a vacant space, we lease it out to a new tenant. So that's a big part we do. When the owner wants to sell the shopping center, we sell it for them. And I love it because what we do It really involves a lot about community, which really goes to a lot of my personal interests and backgrounds.
Right.
And understanding different communities. And when you do retail, you're really you talk about having global listeners. We have global tenants. You know, we have people from all over the world that come to different markets and, you know, open up different unique businesses. So that's fun. We range from, you know, mom and pop businesses to startup businesses to entrepreneurs to Fortune 500 companies. And that's fun. That's a cool part about what we do.
And you've actually grown this business.
Yeah.
Started it with your brother?
Yeah, my brother actually started it himself back in 1990. He is 9 years older than me, but I am mom's favorite, so keep that in mind. And it's interesting. My brother founded the company with the same thing we do now, but he was really just locally focused. I graduated from Florida State University in 1993, and I had a different career. I got involved with a larger real estate company, and I did a lot of work nationally and some globally. And so we were doing similar things, but it was a different skill set. And what happened was in 2004, our dad passed away, and he had been a pastor and had done some civil rights work. And so when he died, I kind of reevaluated my life. And in 2006, I quit my job. I didn't have a big business plan, but I bought half the company. And about that time, we were probably about 7 employees. And my brother likes to say, I usually put this in quotes, he said, I then screwed things up. But that skill set combination of my brother's had a really strong operational skill set with my institutional client skill set really exploded the company. So we went from being 7 employees in Orlando to 70 across the Southeast and over the last 10 years.
Well, I know you're proud of graduating from Florida State, and I also know that Florida State is proud of you and what you've done with this company as an inductee into their College of Business Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
that's cool.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
I would like for people to understand some of the values that you as a leader project in your company. And I know that everybody listening is a leader.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody listening is trying to get wiser in the way that they lead. And I know that one of the values that you focus on is humility,
mm-hmm.
as a core value and also your leadership style.
Right.
Tell us a bit about that.
Sure. And Sam, if you don't mind, when I think about mission and vision, I kind of think of that as like the tip of the spear. You know, I kind of think like Moses, like we're headed a certain direction. I think with that. When I think about values, I think about those kind of being the pillars that are supporting that, you know, like
okay.
those kind of the boundaries. And I don't know if I'm right about that. It's kind of a think about it. So when I think about those values, we took a long time and did a lot of research, a lot of soul searching about who we are and what we're about. And humility is a key component to that. You know, that when you're a service provider, you know, I tell my staff every day, what do I do every day? Well, I figuratively put on an apron. My job is to go out there and see what my clients need and help them achieve their goals.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, I like that. I enjoy that. I enjoy being a service provider. I enjoy caring and having compassion and serving with passion. And humility, which is, you know, not thinking less of ourselves but more of others, is a key component to that.
And how does humility evidence itself in your organization?
Well, it's funny. If you were to come by our corporate headquarters, we run the building that we're in. You know, we're a tenant in our own building, and
okay.
then we run the building. And in front of our building, we have a pylon sign, so it's a sign that lists all the tenants. And one of my employees was noticing recently that our name's on the bottom of the sign. And they asked, you know, because since we control the sign, why would our name be on the bottom? So they asked the question, why are we on the bottom? And I asked them back, why are we on the bottom? And they didn't know. So the second question I asked an employee, I said, where do I park my car? And she thought, she goes, yeah, you always park your car in the very last parking space on the property. And I said, why do I do that? And she then was so puzzled. And I said, because we value people over ourselves, right? So that's a little symbolic thing. But putting our client, if you look at our pylon sign, our client is on the top, we're on the bottom. If you look at where I park my car, it's in the last space because I want all the good spaces to go to the employees, particularly if they're expecting
mm-hmm.
a baby or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I do that. There's a painting we have in our lobby that my brother picked out, and he's a really good eye for this kind of thing. And it's a waiter serving a man and a woman. And it's this reinforcement of this culture of when you come to work, it's valuing others, right? And so another example of that might be is like our growth, like in a very specific business way. Why have we gone in the states we've gone in? We've gone in those states because our clients took us in those states. They asked us to. A quick point of time in history, 26 years ago, our company simply did leasing and brokerage. And one of our clients, early clients, named Daryl Carter, called us and said that he had bought a building and he needed a management company, and he wanted us to manage it, to which we said, we don't do property management. And he said, well, we need you to do this. And thus, our property management company was born out of his request. So I give this little examples of the sign or my parking space, but then I can give you strategic, why are we in the states we're in? We're in the states we're in, the geographic region, because our clients ask us to be.
We have a feature in each podcast, and the feature is called Sunday to Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to do with something that you might hear on a Sunday from the pulpit, in church, and think about that as an insight that you could then take Monday to work and on through your work life.
Right.
And I'd like to drill down a little bit more on this topic of humility. And this is something from Proverbs 11:2. It's a verse, 11:2.
Right.
And it says that pride comes before disgrace, but with humility comes wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
So that pride and disgrace seem linked.
Right.
And humility and wisdom seem linked.
Right.
So what's the difference between that pride and humility, and why is one seem positive and one seem more negative in terms of outcome?
Well, it's funny. When I think about pride, to me, what the opposite of pride is just John's definition. Again, I don't know if I'm right. I'm just for my own brain.
We're interested in your ideas.
Is I like the word coachable. You know, what I want to be personally and what I want our company to be, our staff to be, is coachable. And what that means is that we have a spirit of wanting to learn, wanting to improve, and wanting to get better. And when you live your life in that style of seeking advice, seeking, trusting people, and getting that coaching, you can do your job better. When I think of pride, pride is a lifestyle of saying, you know, that a person knows better than other people. It's the opposite of coaching. It prevents learning. It prevents people in excelling at their work. And that can be very dangerous and very problematic. So humility, knowing that we need to know more, aligns with wisdom. Pride of thinking we know it all and don't need to learn anything can lead to destruction. Can I share a story with you?
Please.
About that? We had a really exceptional employee who was smart, capable, and hardworking. And she had come to me and said that she wanted to take the next step in her career and she wanted to go into leadership. And so after a follow-up conversation, I asked her to lead building our website, a new website for the company.
Okay.
Now, when you're building the website, one of the things you have to do is interact heavily with our sales force, you know, the leasing people, the sales people. And you've worked with sales and leasing people before, and sales and leasing people, they all have ADD, they're gregarious, they see something shining and they run off. I mean, that's who they are, right?
Right.
You know, so that's how God made them, and that's how they need to be. If they weren't that, they wouldn't get their job. And a lot of them are younger. You know, sometimes they're in their 20s and 30s and make good money, and that's the world. Well, she really struggled herding the cats, if you will, dealing with these people with these different personalities. So she was working on the website, and it was a Friday morning, and I happened to pull up the website, and lo and behold, she had launched the website, and not the new website, not told me.
Oh.
Okay. And that was bad, but as I looked at the website, I found some typos. I found some mistakes. So then I buzzed her office to talk to her about it, and then I kind of felt she took the day off. So she had launched the website the night before and then taken the day off. So I contacted her boss and figured what's going on, and she came into work. She had taken off and immediately resigned. And what had happened was that she could not handle the humility of trying to deal with people who, you know, she just needed to work with. Here's what she didn't know. Our vision was to terminate her boss and promote her.
Mm.
That whole thing of that website, it was a test. It was us seeing, could she handle leadership? So, you know, she ended up leaving, and then over time we replaced her and her boss. But the point of the story being is that it wasn't her hard work, it wasn't her intelligence, it was her pride that prevented her from getting a bigger, better career.
Awesome story. I'm glad you shared that. Okay, you mentioned coaching.
Yes.
And I know that one of your interests is coaching sort of a football team style and coaching versus sort of a track style.
Right.
And when you think about those two, our listeners, I think, would greatly be interested in what's the difference and how does that fit into your organization and your leadership style?
Sure. Well, when you think about coaching, and we could say football, but it would apply to soccer for some people around the world.
Team sport.
The teammates are interdependent. You know, one can't survive without the other. So when we think about basketball, soccer, things like that, they have to, they're in unity together. And so the success depends on one another. There are certainly some aspects of business that things are dependent on each other, and learning and understanding is important. Track, on the other hand, is different. When you have a successful track team, you've got somebody that runs the marathon that's a very thin, slender-built person.
Right.
And you've got somebody that does the high hurdles who's probably really tall. You've got somebody that does the shot put, and they're sort of a heavy-set, stocky person. Their success is not dependent on each other. The shot putter to win a gold medal in the Olympics has no impact on what the marathon runner is doing, right? So when you're coaching a track team, what's important is that you coach each of them to their best, and then you encourage them to cheer for one another even though they don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you're leading a sales team, it's very similar. You know, I can have a salesperson having a record-breaking year, and the person in the office next to them could be having the worst year of their life, right? And so, and they're not dependent on each other. So trying to create a culture where they do cheer for each other is really important. And I think successful, great track teams that win lots of national championships or win lots of gold medals have learned that. They've learned how to cheer for one another and reach out to each other. When you have sales forces, I think great sales forces learn that skill of having to teach them to cheer for one another.
One of the things that that leadership literature talks about is that, that leadership needs to match the situation
Sure.
that you're in. And it's interesting in this circumstance to hear you talk and say that in one sense you may be coaching a football team, in another sense you may be coaching a track team.
Correct.
And your style needs to respond to that.
Right, exactly.
Very interesting.
Mold of the situation.
Yeah,
sure.
Good. I have a quote for you here, and I want you to react to it.
Okay.
It's a quote from Martin Luther King. Everybody can be great because everybody can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to make your subject and your verb agree to serve. You only need a heart full of grace, a soul generated by love.
Wow, I love it.
It's pretty powerful, isn't it?
Pretty powerful. Yeah. What pops up to my mind is I get the opportunity to guest lecture at a lot of different universities, and a lot of times I'll guest lecture in graduate schools. And, of course, a little irony, I lecture at graduate schools that would have never taken me as a student. So, but here's the thing. All these different students I meet with, and some of them are at small colleges, some big colleges, some undergrads, some getting their associate's degrees versus their master's degrees. A lot of the time, they're all pretty similar. You know, I don't see these huge, you know, delta between the academia. Some schools would get mad at me for hearing me say that, but
right.
It's not that. What I really see is on the student level, and what limits the great ones, the ones getting their master's degree that come from great families, have all these resources. You know what the one thing I see that limits them is fear. It's fear. And I'll encourage them to make a phone call to someone and ask for a meeting, or I'll encourage them to get some mentorship. And what limits them over and over, they're scared they're going to look stupid, or they're going to make mistakes, so they do nothing. But sometimes you get a student who is at a smaller college, and they're filled in with love, and they have the perspective of, let's give it a shot because it's a loving thing to do. So the word, when you had that quote from Dr. King, that's what jumped out to me, is that when you have an overflow of love, and it's an overflow of love for the business or for clients or for coworkers or for your university, and out of that overflow, greatness can come out of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I heard out of that. So I would encourage your listeners, some of them might be trying to be an entrepreneur or working for a small company, or maybe they're at a big company and they feel like they're a small part of a big company, and I would tell you, forget all that. The overflow of love out of your heart to serve and care for people, you can change the world.
We end each podcast, and believe it or not, we're close to the end of your podcast.
Oh, no.
has to do with a pearl of wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
What's the one statement that you might like for people to retain as they listen to all this?
I would advise them that great leaders must be relevant at a point of crisis. And when you're leading an organization and there is a crisis, and it could be a significant crisis, like here in Orlando, Florida, we had the Pulse shooting.
Right.
Right, and that was two blocks from my office. And so having the thought, and I don't know that we handled it as great as we could have. We talked a lot about how we could do better in the situations, but when that happens, what can we as a neighbor to this devastating thing happen do to be a resource? But it can happen on a different level. It could be an employee has a death in the family, or an employee finds out someone in their family has cancer, or they have cancer. I think that leaders, you got to lean in, and when crisis happens, I want people to think of me, right? Like, why do people call John Crossman? Because there's an emergency, and they know they can count on me. Hmm. So leaders need to be, you don't get the phone call because we want to party their celebration, not that that's bad. It's when there's crisis, they call you.
I'm sorry to all the listeners out there, but John's time is up. I'm sure you could go on and on listening to John. Thank you so much, John, for being here today. You can find John on LinkedIn by searching for John Crossman, C-R-O-S-S-M-A-N. Thanks to all of you for being here on Wisdom Wednesday. You can keep in touch with me on Facebook at chasing.wisdom or my website, chasewisdom.com. See you all next Wednesday. In the meantime, keep chasing. God bless.
You've been listening to Chasing Wisdom with host Dr. Sam Serto. We would love to hear from you regarding this podcast. You can reach us at northlandchurch.net/chasingwisdom. We will be here each Wednesday with a fresh look at being a wiser leader in business, Bible, and life. Want to reach out to Dr. Serto? Email him at sserto@rollins.edu.